RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
The New Zealand Climate Science Coalition is a group of scientists and experts who aim to provide accurate and unbiased information about climate change. The coalition was formed in 2006 with the goal of refuting what it believes were unfounded claims about anthropogenic global warming. And Barry Brill of the New Zealand Climate Science Coalition is a former MP and Minister of Energy, Petrocorp Director and Chair of the Gas Council, Power NZ, ESANS and EMCO, and, as I just mentioned, presently the Chairman of the New Zealand Climate Science Coalition. And Barry Brill is with me. Barry, thanks for coming on RCR.
Pleasure to be here, Paul.
Okay, so here's a simple way to start off. Mark out a 10 for this, what we're about to talk about. What do you think?
Oh, I'd give it about 8.
Okay, well, it's not a bad mark.
No, it's a good mark. It's the first time in about at least 6 years that we have seen a climate announcement that contained an element of common sense, as well as a great deal of the inevitable rhetoric.
Yeah.
But this time, each of the five pillars make sense in their own right. In addition to the five that were announced by the Minister Simon Watts, the Simeon Brown also announced three policies on the same day as Minister of Energy. And so you have, in effect, 8 different policies which put together cover both the adaptation side of climate change. I wish they'd put a bit more emphasis on that. The advantage of spending money on adaptation is that it's going to be useful against future weather events, however they're caused, whether they're caused by changes in climate or by the 10,000 other things that cause extreme weather events.
Yeah.
But whereas money spent on mitigation, well, it goes into a sea of uncertainty, and you never know whether you're getting any return at all on the investment. So it's good to see them working on adaptation. I have one problem with the Select Committee, which is currently considering that issue, and is referred to in the the new strategy, and that is the fear that they will over-exaggerate future occurrences on the basis of theory, as opposed to using actual data that's been experienced in the past. They use these scenarios that the future might look like this or it might look like that. There is one of the scenarios which is way out, never going to happen. Nobody thinks it's going to happen, and yet NIWA continue to use it as if it was something that we have to be concerned about, something that might create a future threat. And the various local bodies around the country are saying we have to be prepared for the worst case, and therefore they are looking to build infrastructure and protection based on a scenario which nobody in the world thinks is the least bit likely. So that's the major concern in regard to adaptation. But in all other respects, I think they're very much on the right track and under the adaptation heading.
Yeah, I think you're talking, well, we're familiar with the Kapiti situation and the data that's been used there, which is truly worst case scenario. In fact, I think an international body said it's not fit for policy making. So, yeah, good point on that.
Referring to the Kapiti situation, but there's many others. John, the SURF proposal at up at Kaipara was almost turned down by the Auckland Council on the basis that they were expecting future warming to be 3.5 degrees, which is way above what the United Nations says. It's way above what the International Energy Agency says. But it is what NEWA says under this extreme scenario. So we can see that extreme scenario sneaking in here and there and causing major unnecessary expenditure unless the Select Committee takes action on that. And I'm hopeful that they will.
What about the trading of, you know, carbon, emissions trading scheme? What do you have to say about that, the way it's been?
Well, the emissions trading scheme at the moment and for the last couple of years has been a bit of a mess. I think every single auction last year, they sold nothing. There's been one auction this year that sold nothing. But getting the ETS right, we either do away with it or we do it right. And what the government has said in its second pillar is that it's going to get the ETS to work properly. Mm. So that can only be a good thing. If we're going to have one, it should work properly.
Do you think we should have one? Is it necessary? You have to accept or buy in, don't you, to the climate crisis to then follow on and say, well, we need a trading system for it. What's your belief on that?
Well, no, I don't think you need to buy into the so-called climate crisis. We have signed up to the Paris Agreement. We've undertaken, along with virtually every other country in the world, to take reasonable steps to try to reduce our emissions. Now, you know, I would say that we shouldn't have done that, but given the fact that every other country signed up, I think that's probably been a little unrealistic. So we probably had to sign up. We are signed up, and we have to do something about emissions. It doesn't mean we have to go mad over it. It doesn't mean we have to put a carbon price of $100 a ton. And that's really where the controversy arises. It's okay to have an ETS scheme, and under the National Party for 9 years, the scheme had a ceiling of $25. $25 was the maximum per ton. But now, of course, when the Labor Party came into power, it immediately pushed that price up to $75 a ton, 300% on what it had been previously. So the issue is now, and I haven't said, there's been no mention of what level of price the National Party will be looking for. But they have said that whatever price it is, we will make it work properly. So to that extent, I give it a reasonable mark.
Okay. And just moving through these pillars, removing bureaucratic barriers to renewable electricity. What sort of renewable do you think is being talked about there, Barry?
Well, they'll be talking about wind and solar and geothermal. The advantage of geothermal is that it's predictable. Like hydro or like gas or fossil fuel energy, you can turn it on whenever you want to turn it on and turn it off when you want to turn it off. The other renewables with wind and sun, you just have to wait and see what happens. And, of course, you can't run a system on that basis. So, therefore, you have to back it up. Now, we are quite fortunate in New Zealand that we can back up the wind with hydro. So if the wind slows down or stops, then we can turn the hydro dam on and fill the gap that way. We can only do that up to a certain limit, and I think it's probably a good thing that we take advantage of the handful of good wind sites that we have, but we only have a limited number of those, we haven't yet utilized them, or several of them, because the Resource Management Act has made it impossible to build almost anything of any kind. So what they're saying in the third pillar is that they'll remove the restrictions created by the RMA and similar legislation and allow the wind and solar sites to be developed. But the part I like about it is that they go on to say to provide affordable power.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Where they've gone wrong overseas is they, in some jurisdictions like Germany, they've just plowed ahead no matter how unaffordable it is. And the UK is talking about doing the same thing with offshore wind. The price has increased 300%, but on purely ideological grounds, they have simply agreed to pay the extra 200% and proceed with it. Now, here the government is saying that they aim to remove the barriers so that we can develop affordable wind, which is only a certain number of sites, and affordable solar. Now, and affordable geothermal, I shouldn't overlook that because I think the geothermal prospect is quite good. But the wind is limited, and the solar, well, given our temperate zone and our climate, solar will never be a very... If we say we'll only use it to the extent that it's affordable, then I think it might make a useful contribution to a small degree, but I don't think it'll be very big. I'm saying geothermal is quite good, wind is okay but limited, solar is okay but limited. As long as we don't go beyond our limited resources and say, well, we'll pay whatever price it is with government subsidies, like they have done in Germany and they're doing in Australia, and it's totally wrecking their economies, not just their energy supplies. So I'm encouraged by the fact that the coalition strategy emphasizes the word affordable.
Hmm. I think our listeners will be pleased with that word being in there as well. So no more dams. Is nuclear any sort of option in the future, do you think, Barry? Because I think the Aussies are considering that.
Yes. I think nuclear will be everywhere within 20 years. They are bringing in these small nuclear reactors. They're introducing much more advanced nuclear technologies, what they call Generation 5. And even Generation 4 is, they're only scratching the surface. But new reactors are about to be built at pilot level in Canada and the US. China's already built one. So I think within another 20 to 30 years, nuclear will be the major energy source that will gradually overtake fossil fuels over a period of maybe 20 or 30 years beyond that. So by the end of the century, it'll probably be fossil fuels almost gone out of power generation and everything turned to nuclear. But I don't know that it'll come to New Zealand until very late in the piece, because we still have... I hope we'll still have quite good gas supplies. I expect that we will next turn to wind and solar and geothermal. We'll eke out a little bit more from hydro, but I don't think there's much left. Then by that time, with a bit of luck, the attitude to gas as a clean fuel may have gone back to normal. Like we'll be seeing, I think, all around the world, people backing up their renewables with gas and gas being accepted as a greenhouse gas, which is relatively benign.
Yeah, okay. Just a minute or two left, Barry. Thanks for giving us a bit of time. So just a couple of more things I want to ask you about. The GMO grass livestock part or pillar in the fourth pillar, have you got anything to say about that? Because our audience does not want anything GMO, nothing genetically modified. It seems like a bit of a risky thing to do. You got an opinion on that?
Well, yes. My opinion is probably different than most of your audience. I think technology advances. There were a lot of worries about electricity. There were a lot of worries about internal combustion engines. There were a lot of worries about genetic modification about 30 years ago. But it's now, I think, subject to appropriate safeguards. It's going to be in our future. And the next pillar, which refers to innovation, it doesn't mention GMO, but I think you're onto it. I think they are referring to the reduction of livestock methane.
Yeah, yeah, through grass.
By changing the either the cows or changing the grass.
Yeah.
And
fiddling around with nature.
That'll be a controversial step. It'll be interesting to see whether, when it comes to the crunch, whether people are more frightened of the unknowns of climate change or the unknowns of genetic modification.
Yeah.
You can take your pick.
Yeah, no, you can. And New Zealand's role as a carbon sink, how much offset could we realistically expect to achieve by, you know, sinking carbon? Is that something that we could be smart with as well?
I think it could be huge. We are, as a nation, a carbon sink. Research in 2017 established that the carbon dioxide in the air as it approaches New Zealand down in Fiordland coming from the west, there is a lot more carbon dioxide in the air coming into New Zealand than there is in the air leaving New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
So overall, although humans in New Zealand create some carbon dioxide, about six times that amount is absorbed by our vegetation. And so if we were to sink into the sea tomorrow, the world would be worse off. There would be more carbon dioxide in the global atmosphere. Now, the reason why that we don't get advantage from that is that we don't count any of it. Because our Ministry for the Environment considers we should only count plantation forests. And anything else, whether it be the Fiordland National Park or all the apple orchards or grapes or farmlands or whatever, we don't count any of that. Now, every other country in the world, with the sole exception of Japan and New Zealand, they do count that. So we put ourselves at a huge disadvantage by saying that our net greenhouse gases, this huge 600 million tons figure, when in fact, if we were to count everything, then we have about a minus 1,800 million tons.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm sure we won't get around to counting everything. But we could count a hell of a lot more of it. And I certainly hope we do, because we're in this bind where Jacinda Ardern's cabinet in 2021 agreed to spend $30 billion on buying offshore credits as a means of reducing our gases, saying we can't reduce our gases at home, so we'll spend $30 billion to do it overseas. Well, we're stuck with that. I don't think there's any chance that we will ever be able to afford to do it. But what we can afford to do is we can do a proper job of counting our sinks and probably resolve the same issue, that instead of buying offshore credits, we'll find them onshore. And it's interesting that the fifth pillar that the Minister of Climate Change announced and the third pillar that the Minister of Energy announced are both really on that topic. So I think this is going to be bigger than all else combined.
I'm glad I asked you about that then. Thank you. Barry Brill, Chairman of the New Zealand Climate Science Coalition, thanks for coming on the program and giving us your thoughts to, well, the new policy, climate energy policy, I suppose, from the coalition government. It's really interesting to hear what you had to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.